Hello, this is Sheila Winger with the Vermilion County News, dated Wednesday, January 10th, 2018. We'll begin today's reading with an article from the Commercial News called Museum Works on Displays, Seeks Funds. The Vermilion County War Museum will be closed weekdays for the rest of this month. However, it will be open on Saturdays. The museum staff will be working on new displays to mark the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I and the rehabilitation of a room for more display space. The museum has one of the largest collections of World War I artifacts in the state. For information about tours or visiting the museum, call 431-0034 or email vcwm@comcast.net. In addition, the museum has launched its first capital campaign to help with repairs to the museum. The campaign hopes to raise $50,000 to cover a majority of the repairs. Some of the repairs that are needed are for refurbishing a room that was damaged from a leak in the roof, which has since been repaired. The room needs to be refurbished so displays can be returned. The museum also needs to replace lighting to become more energy efficient and to use less UV light that can damage the displays. Other repairs also are needed. The museum is awaiting the arrival of new front doors, which are being rebuilt by Amish craftsmen. Since the initial launching of the Capital Campaign Fund, the museum has raised more than $25,000 towards its goal. The museum's programs draw a wide range of people, including parents, school-age children, and visitors from out of state and even overseas. The American Legion partners with the museum, and students do research, including those from the University of Illinois and local students working on history projects. The museum is developing a new educational outreach program that will allow volunteers to go into schools. The Vermilion County War Museum has been a foundation of Vermilion County for more than 19 years. The museum is the only curator in Vermilion County of war artifacts that span from the Revolutionary War to current conflicts. The mission of the museum is to provide a valuable civic resource for preserving military artifacts, for enhancing the economic vitality of the community, for honoring those who have served our nation, and providing an educational and historic forum. Tax-deductible contributions can be made by calling the museum to donate via credit card, or checks can be mailed directly to the museum. If you are interested in discussing sponsorship opportunities or have any questions about the campaign, you can call 431-0034 or email vcwm@comcast.net. Our next article from the Commercial News is called A Morale Booster, USO Show to Raise Funds for War Museum. People who attend the second USO show, charity fundraiser don't have to wear period dress, but it would be fun if they did, organizers say. You don't have to dress from the era, World War II, said Susan Michelli, development director for the Vermilion County War Museum. If you do want to get into the spirit, she added, it can be a military uniform or civilian clothing from any time period. The fundraiser will be at 7 p.m. Saturday, January 27th at American Legion Post 210 at 201 Prospect. Doors will open at 6:30 p.m. All ages are invited. Guests will enjoy appetizers, music, silent auction, and live auction. Hostesses, who will be wearing period civilian clothing, include Ms. American Elegance 2017, Michaela Peterson, Ms. Springfest 2017, Billy Joe Shank, and Miss Georgetown Fair Heather Simpson. The USO, United Service Organizations Incorporated, was founded in February 1941 by President Franklin D. Roosevelt. Most people are familiar with 1940s-era USO canteens as depicted in movies or on TV. The programs helped boost soldiers' morale and connect them to their homes. The nonprofit organization continues today to provide live entertainment, such as comedians and musicians, to members of the armed forces and their families. True to that format, the War Museum's event will have music by the Mike Ellis Band and an appearance by comedian veteran Dan West of Indianapolis. The silent and live auctions will offer a variety of quality items, including gift cards, a set of bowls made by Gail Garner from wooden shelves taken from the original Carnegie Library, a Longaberger basket, Tupperware, Scentsy, a Cardinals blanket made by Karen McGinnis, and a woman's cut leather jacket with an American flag design on the back. Also offered will be prints by Don Stivers, a painter whose photorealistic work reflects his fascination with military history. One item is a 1989 commissioned work, The Proffered Wreath. Also for sale are limited edition prints of four Civil War generals, Ulysses Grant, Robert E. Lee, Lieutenant General Nathan Bedford Forrest, and Major General Joshua L. Chamberlain. The generals' prints will be sold separately, and a minimum amount for bids will be set. Ron Bolser, Vice President of the War Museum Board, said the first USO event last year attracted about 100 people. However, it was held in the War Museum meeting room, and it was too congested. By moving to the Legion's multi-purpose room this year, there will be more space, and people may buy drinks at the bar in a nearby room. We should have a more diverse audience this year, he said. Last year, Bolser was in World War II clothing. He was a World War II reenactor for about 12 years. Like Michelli, he said period clothing is not required, but it's encouraged. Men can wear uniforms, and women can find vintage 1940s clothing, but any time period is okay. Come and have a good time. It's a different type of event, he said. All proceeds will go into the War Museum's general fund. Tickets for the USO fundraiser are available by calling 431-0034 or emailing vcwm@comcast.net. Tickets are $20 for a single and $30 for a couple. A limited number of tickets will be sold. Deadline is Friday. Sponsorships, which begin at $100 to help fund the event, are available. Call or email the museum. Our next article here is called Oakwood Buys Former Grocery Store Site. After sitting vacant for more than a year, the former Oakwood IGA soon will have a new owner. The Village of Oakwood has agreed to pay $123,750 for the site at 100 South Scott Street after negotiating with the First National Bank of Catlin that had acquired it when the owner filed bankruptcy. The Oakwood store, as well as the Catlin IGA, closed in November 2016. The village had been actively seeking an interested party to reopen a grocery store there. After several months with no prospects, the village board authorized Mayor Clay Woodard and another board member to negotiate with the bank for the building. "We don't have any plans for it," trustee Bob Parr said of the site. "We need to control what goes in there." A new village hall and community center is one possible use for the building, he said. Parr said he had to relocate a meeting last month with Love's Travel Stop and Country Store representatives to the Oakwood Emergency Rescue Building because there was not enough room at the village hall. "We need the space to have activities around the village hall," he said. In other business, the former I-74 Auto Truck Plaza on the north side of Interstate 74 will be demolished in February to make way for the Love's Travel Stop and Country Store, Parr said. The former I-74 Auto Truck Plaza closed in October 2007. Love's Travel Stops and Country Stores of Oklahoma City purchased the 18-acre site for $342,500 in October 2015. Parr said the village's sewer and water provider, Utilities Incorporated, had started work to extend a sewer line under I-74 to the Love's property, but temporarily stopped work a couple weeks ago because of the extremely cold temperatures. The Salt Kettle rest stop along westbound I-74 near Oakwood closed in November, but will reopen in the spring, while the state runs a sewer line from the rest stop that eventually will tie into the Love sewer line. In other business, the board also adopted a resolution to appoint Parr as an interim village president in the absence of the village president. They discussed conceptual development planning that would address future development in the village. "We need a plan for north of the village and south of the interstate so we don't end up with the wrong type of business that would abut Dolby Street," Parr said. "We might need a buffer or possible barriers between housing and businesses," he said, adding that the plan also would include sidewalks, curbs, and drainage for new development. The council approved fireworks for the village's 4th of July celebration, approved the purchase of 8 upgraded emergency radios. The new radios were necessary because the county is changing its radio communications system, Parr said. Next in the commercial news, we have an article called State Releases Funds for Removal of Dams. The new year could finally mean the removal of the Ellsworth Park and Danville dams. Mayor Scott Eisenhower told the City Council's Public Works Committee Tuesday night the city received notice from the Illinois Department of Natural Resources that the state has released the funds to remove the two dams. It was July 2015 when the IDNR planned to remove the Ellsworth Park Dam. IDNR will remove that dam and will finish engineering design for the removal of the Danville Dam behind the Public Safety Building. The funds are being released and those two projects are moving forward, Eisenhower said, also adding the city will help with some clearing related to the project. An IDNR representative in 2015 had stated all permits are in place for the removal of the Ellsworth Park Dam. An IDNR had been finalizing contracts with aggregate providers and special waste haulers for the removal of the dam. Plans then also had called for the removal of the Danville Dam behind the Public Safety Building starting in the fall of 2015. The removal projects had been among state projects under review after Governor Bruce Rauner took office. He ordered a review of all state contracts or grants awarded after November 1, 2014. The city had received extension paperwork regarding the projects. In February 2017, City Council amended an intergovernmental agreement with the IDNR for the dam removals and restoration project to extend the termination date of the original agreement. The IDNR suspended the contract in June 2015 because the state funding appropriation was not reappropriated for the state's 2016 fiscal year. The agreement stated the IDNR and City of Danville wish to continue with the project should any state funding become available. The IDNR's funding obligation will terminate upon completion of the project or June 30, 2020, whichever comes first. Due to the hydraulic conditions of the Danville and Ellsworth Park dams and that no riverbed protection was placed below the dam upon construction, a submerged hydraulic roller occurs. During time, the turbulent forces generated by a hydraulic roller have eroded a scour hole in the original bed material at the base of the dam. The tailwater submerges the hydraulic jump, creating the submerged hydraulic roller. These rollers typically pull in and hold objects, including people, which often leads to emergency rescues or drownings, according to the IDNR. The most recent drowning at the dams, of several over the years, was of a 24-year-old canoeist in July 2003. Danville City Council members in January 2014 voted 13-1 to have the IDNR remove the Ellsworth Park Dam and 12-2 to remove the Danville Dam behind the Public Safety Building. Aldermen took into account city liability of a known hazard, where drownings have occurred, and costs to remove the safety hazards in agreeing to go forward with the IDNR recommendations on the removals. The IDNR allocated $2 million plus funding for the removal of the two dams. The General Assembly appropriated funds for the Danville Dam removals through bond sales that are part of the Jobs Now program. In other business Tuesday, the committee recommended authorizing funding for the English-Jackson roundabout intersection with a 5-1 vote. The full City Council will act on the item next week. Our next article is called Threat Closes Oakwood Schools. Oakwood District 76 closed all of its schools Tuesday as the Vermilion County Sheriff's Department investigated an email threat that was received the night before. "We canceled school throughout the district and we're working with the County Sheriff's Department," Superintendent Gary Lewis said Tuesday afternoon. Oakwood schools were closed Monday due to icy road conditions, but Lewis said he first noticed the email around 7 p.m. Monday. "We thought it was credible enough to contact the police," he said. "We contacted the authorities and they've been investigating ever since." Lewis said, "I've had bomb threats before," but added this was the first time in his career to have received such a threat via email. He declined to be more specific about the contents of the email. A phone message left at the Vermilion County Sheriff's Department was not immediately returned. In an email message Lewis sent Monday night to Oakwood District parents and staff, he said he was calling off school on Tuesday in the interest of the safety of students and staff. Lewis said Oakwood schools would reopen as soon as the Sheriff's Department deemed it to be safe to do so. He said he expected to make an announcement by Tuesday night whether school could reopen, with parents and staff being contacted through the school messenger system. And our next piece from the Commercial News is called Employee Charged with Stealing from TPAC Credit Union. A Fithian woman faces charges of theft by deception after knowingly obtaining funds from various accounts at TPAC Credit Union, where she worked, according to Vermilion County State's Attorney Jacqueline Lacey. Alexis B. Terry, 22, was charged with a Class 3 felony and could either serve probation or 2 to 5 years in the Department of Corrections. While working at TPAC, Terry obtained funds greater than $500 from May 1st to June 30th, 2017. Her arraignment is scheduled for January 30th at 1:30 p.m. at the Vermilion County Courthouse. Now we'll turn to the News Gazette for our weekly high school confidential report. From Salt Fork High School, student Cade Bennett wrote, "The high school's National Honor Society inducted 13 new members. The program featured the officers and senior members leading the new inductees into the NHS traditions and welcoming them into the group. The new members received their certificates and pins and signed their name into the Salt Fork High School National Honor Society registry." From Georgetown Ridge Farm High School, student Willow Ray submitted, "Over break, the FFA chapter did its annual present drive for the local kids in need. Also, congratulations to the school's 5 Illinois State Scholars, Rachel Winslow, Connor Cavanaugh, Dylan Hall, Hunter Howard, and Willow Ray," here in the newspaper pictured with Principal Kevin Thomas. From Oakwood High School, student Kelsey Blackford wrote, "While students were away on winter break, renovations were taking place in the high school cafeteria. Previously, the white cafeteria wall featured the accomplishments of sports teams. Due to the success in 2016 to 2017, the wall was completely filled. In order to honor the past, a flat-screen TV was mounted. It now plays a slideshow of all the teams that had to be taken down to make room for more recent accomplishments." Moving on in the News Gazette, we have a follow-up article to the Oakwood School District issue. Classes resumed today, but with police presence. After all classes were called off Tuesday following an unspecified email threat, Oakwood schools will reopen today, district officials said. School officials have been in contact with law enforcement officials, and the decision to open was made after careful consideration of all the facts, Superintendent Gary Lewis said in an email Tuesday night. "As a precaution, there will be a police presence at each building for the next few days. We will continue to put the safety of our students and staff first." Lewis said school officials received the threat Monday night and reported it to the police agencies. "School was called off Tuesday in the interest of the safety of students and staff," he said. Our next article here is called Board Approves Engineer's Appointment. A new engineer in Vermilion County will be taking over on February 1st now that the county board has approved the appointment of Adrian Greenwell. Since January 2nd, Greenwell has been working alongside county engineer Doug Stasky, who will retire January 31st. On Tuesday night, the Vermilion County Board approved Greenwell's appointment as the next county engineer, effective February 1st, when he will officially take over from Stasky, who has been in the position since 2008 and was hired as the county's assistant engineer in 2005. A Martinsville native who currently lives in Casey, Greenwell, 57, worked for 32 years as an engineer in the Illinois Department of Transportation's Paris office, then spent more than a year as the senior engineer at Champaign County before going to work for Francis Associates in Paris, an engineering consulting firm where he has worked the last 3.5 years. "It's just an exciting new challenge," said Greenwell, who was already familiar with Vermilion County through his experience in IDOT's Paris office. He said the major project in Vermilion County this year will be overseeing the rehabilitation of the Seidel to Fairmount Road, which is in the southwestern part of the county. He said bids have not yet been sought, but the design is being finalized, and the project will definitely be done this year. Greenwell's annual salary will be $111,150, and his benefit package, including insurance, the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund, and other expenses, will total another $29,900, according to county documents at Tuesday night's meeting. Stasky said he has enjoyed his nearly 13 years in Vermilion County, overseeing day-to-day operations at the County Highway Department, headquartered on Batestown Road west of Danville, and also managing to make steady improvements in infrastructure and annual upgrades in equipment. It's time now to read the area obituaries, and we'll begin with those listed in the News Gazette. Michelle Boer, 54, of Rossville, died at 6:30 a.m. Saturday, January 6th, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Rortvet Funeral Services, 3 South Hodge Street in Tilton. Richard Brian Kress, 89, of Urbana, formerly of Hoopston, passed away at 5:40 a.m. Friday, December 22nd, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Per his wishes, cremation rites have been accorded. A visitation will be held from 11 a.m. to noon, Friday, January 12th, at the Hoopston United Methodist Church at 403 East Main Street in Hoopston. A memorial service will follow the visitation and will begin at noon Friday at the church, with Pastor Kathy Najman officiating. Burial will be held Monday, January 15th at the Riverside Public Cemetery in Riverside, Iowa. Memorials may be made to Hoopston United Methodist Church at 403 East Main Street, Hoopston, Illinois, 60942. Elizabeth Crozier, 79, of Hoopston, died at 9:31 a.m. Monday, January 8th, at home. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Friday at Anderson Funeral Home at 427 East Main Street in Hoopston. Pastor David Meese will officiate. Burial will be in Sugar Creek Cemetery, Stockland. Visitation will be from 4:30 to 7 p.m. Thursday at the funeral home. Clara Meyer, 86, of Danville, died at 9:10 a.m. Saturday, January 6th at Presence United Samaritans Medical Center in Danville. A celebration of life will be scheduled at a later date. Rortvet Funeral Services at 3 South Hodge Street in Tilton is in charge of arrangements. Jeannie Reeves Nasados went to be with the Lord on Saturday, December 30th in Dunedin, Florida. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, January 12th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Funeral services will be at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, January 13th at the funeral home, with Pastor Michael Heidel officiating. Burial will take place at Spring Hill Cemetery in Danville. Marie M. Rennick, 84, of Danville, passed away Saturday, January 6th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Visitation will be from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. January 12th at Church of the Holy Trinity in Danville. Funeral Mass will be at 11 a.m. January 13th. All friends and family are invited to attend. We'll turn now to the commercial news for additional obituaries. Here we have Marilyn Doris Peterson, passed away Saturday, January 6th in Danville, Illinois, where her daughter resides. Family asks that in lieu of flowers, friends may choose to donate in her memory to the ASPCA or the Vermilion County Animal Shelter in Tilton. Her visitation will be held at St. Luke Lutheran Church in Winnemac, Indiana, on Thursday at 4:30, service at 5:30. Interment will take place at Meadowview Cemetery in Lafayette, Indiana, the following day at 10 a.m. Mark Harvey Shields, 56, of Strongsville, Ohio, passed away Friday, January 5th, peacefully at his home. Mark had recently been hospitalized and had experienced problems related to his heart. Mark was born in Danville, Illinois, in 1961, to the late Clifford and Mary Vogt Shields. His visitation will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time, Thursday, January 11th, at Bauer Funeral Home, located at 2089 Columbia Road, Valley City, Ohio. A funeral mass will be celebrated at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, Friday, January 12th, at St. Martin of Tours Catholic Church at 1800 Station Road, Valley City, Ohio. Burial arrangements are incomplete. Mary Alta, known as Jo Sweet, 102, of Lafayette, Indiana, formerly of Danville, passed away Monday, January 8th in Lafayette. Her visitation will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, Thursday, January 11th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Services will be at 10 a.m. Central Time, Friday, January 12th, at East Park Church of Christ at 1224 East Voorhees Street in Danville, with Dennis Floyd officiating. Burial will follow in Stern Cemetery in Fithian, Illinois. Richard Brian Kress, 89, of Urbana, Illinois, formerly of Hoopston, passed away at 5:40 a.m. Friday, December 22nd, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Per his wishes, cremation rites have been accorded. A visitation will be held at 11 a.m. until noon, Friday, January 12th, at Hoopston United Methodist Church at 403 East Main Street in Hoopston. Oh, I'm sorry, we have read this one already. Richard T., known as Dick Wodetsky, 86, of Sebring, Florida, passed away January 1st at Bay Pines Veterans Hospital in St. Petersburg, Florida. Before relocating to Sebring in 2016, Mr. Wodetsky resided in Danville for all 85 years of his life. A celebration of Dick's life will be held at a later date. Memorials may be made in his memory to the charity of the donor's choice. Now we'll turn to VermilionCountyFirst.com for some more local news. Here we have an article called New Contract Approved for Correctional Officers. The Vermilion County Board has ratified a new three-year contract agreement with correctional officers represented by the Fraternal Order of Police. County Board Chairman Mike Marone notes the vote wraps up the contract talks involving all of the county's bargaining units. The agreement for correctional officers includes a 2.25% base salary increase each year, retroactive to December 1, 2016. There is also an increase in longevity during the second and third years of the agreement, and some language was also updated. Chairman Marone notes the contract percent mirrors what was given other county employees, averaging a 3% total wage and longevity increase for each year. The formula was applied to all seven labor units in the county. Next here is a brief article called Oakwood Fatality ID'd as Jacksonville Man. Illinois State Police say a pedestrian who was struck and killed at an Oakwood truck stop last evening is a 47-year-old Jacksonville, Illinois man. The victim's name has not been released yet. State police say their preliminary investigation found that the victim was in a parking lot near the diesel fuel pumps of the Phillips 66 in Oakwood. Troopers say a semi started pulling forward and struck the victim, who was dragged to a nearby ramp leading to eastbound Interstate 74. Troopers say the driver pulled over on the ramp when he thought his truck was having mechanical problems. That is when a witness notified the truck driver his vehicle had struck the pedestrian. The semi-driver involved is from Martinsville, Ohio. No charges have been filed against him at this time. This has been Sheila Winger with the Vermilion County News, dated Wednesday, January 10th, 2018. I hope you stay dry today, and I look forward to reading with you again soon.